Hello, welcome to episode 31 of Near Death Dolls. I'm Paige.
And I'm Lisa.
And we are your hosties with the boasties.
While talking about ghosties.
And other survivor shit.
Oh no. Oh yay.
Wait, well, yeah, they survive, so that's good. Yeah.
I was like, wait, oh no. Oh yeah, forgot sometimes things can go well.
Right, better. There's a happy ending here.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today. Paige will be telling us Julianne Kupke's story of survival in the jungle.
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah. But first, we wanted to tell you all about our special Patreon exclusive show, Dolls After Dark. It's a chill conversation show and kind of dirty, like the name implies.
Mm-hmm. We hold nothing back. And if you want a piece of that dark dolly fun, join our Patreon. You can find the link in our show notes, or you can go to www.patreon.com/neardeathdollspodcast. So, Paige, what you got to get you tipsy, girl?
I don't know. What's it called again? Batarang? Batarang. Tequila and Coke.
Bangarang! Do you remember that from Hook? Bangarang?
Bangarang!
No, it's called a batanga, but yeah, sure.
Batanga? I like bangarang better now.
We can call it bangarang.
Yeah, I don't have like any, like, you know, you're supposed to put lime in there or something for batanga. I was going to say bangarang. So I can just call it bangarang because literally I just put Coke in tequila.
Hey, that works. It gets the job done.
That's
bang-a-rang.
Right.
Bangarang.
Bangarang, Rufio.
Rufio.
Rufio. Rufio. Rufio.
Ooh, throwback.
Dang, that was a good movie. I want to watch it now. After this, of course.
Of course. We're not going to break right now and just go watch movies. We wouldn't do that to you guys.
An hour and a half break to go watch Hook. BRB. Well, Lisa, what do you got to get you tipsy, girl?
Okay, so this last weekend I went to a bridal shower and I won a game. I'm not going to say which game it is, but I won a game and I got a little like gift pack of nifty gifties. And I took it back to my mom's house and opened it and my nieces were there and they're like, "Ooh, can I have this? Can I have that? Can I have this? Can I have that?" I'm like, okay. So by the time they were done taking all the little fun things, what was left was booze.
Perfect. They can't have that.
Even though I got some like little like mini like travel bottles of like different flavored vodkas. But also I got a Seagram's Escape Tropical Rosé in a can.
Holy shit. That sounds fancy.
It's very pretty. Like, the can's pretty. It's, like, pink with little pink flowers all over it and, like, a seascape. It's very pretty. So, I didn't know really what to expect. I've never had one of these before. It's natural passion fruit, dragon fruit, and rosé flavors. It's a malt beverage, I believe. 3.2% alcohol by volume. Contains alcohol. I just cracked it open and had a sip. It's very nice. I'm kind of surprised.
Okay, and it's Seagram's brand.
Mm-hmm. Seagram's Escapes Tropical Rosé. And I've had a few, like, canned rosés before, and I just haven't been a fan of them. But this has, like, the tropical flavors. It's very light. It doesn't leave a very, like, syrupy, sugary taste in my mouth. It's almost like between like a wine cooler and like a truly like seltzer. It's not one or the other. It's kind of nicely in the middle. So kudos to the ladies who picked this out and for giving it to me.
You won it. You earned that thing, girl.
Fair and square. And
that's right.
If I were to give you a little clue, I won it by being probably the dirtiest person there.
Dolls After Dark style.
Dolls After Dark style. Yes. There might have been candy underwear involved. That's all I'm saying.
Yum, yum.
But that's me. Wow. But Paige, I want to hear about Julianne Kupke. Who is she? What has she done? How did she survive in the jungle?
What's she done indeed? In the jungle, yeah. Like Jungle Book, right?
It had to be. Was there a bear and a snake and a panther?
Everybody was friends. The tiger was a jerk. There was some vultures that sounded like the Beatles.
I've never heard the story before, so I'm very excited.
Oh, okay. I hadn't really heard of it either. My esteemed boyfriend, Sam Hiers, I don't know, God rest his soul, I don't know. He's here. He's here with us.
Did he die? Are you keeping his body there?
I was trying to think of something fun to say about him, and that was the first phrase that came to mind.
I was literally like, just talked to him yesterday. How is this possible?
Yeah, Sam's still with us. His foot hurts, but no, he's still with us. Okay. No, he found this story on Instagram, I believe, just a random post as he was scrolling. And he's like, this is interesting. Maybe you want to do an episode about this. And I was like, sure. I don't know. It does look kind of cool. And now I'm completely invested. I've watched like 20 documentaries about it. I want to read her book. It's great.
Oh, well, I'm excited now.
Yeah, it's a good story. It's intense, but it's a good story. So let's get into it.
Let me have another sip of this. I don't know if there's going to be enough alcohol, but go on.
Sip, sip, what the shit? Let's have one right now.
Sip, sip, what the shit?
Okay, here we go. Now, I did give Lisa this warning already. This is the only thing she knows about the episode. It is about a plane crash. And so, you guys, if you're very afraid of flying, you might not want to listen to this. There's a happy ending, but also...
could be a bit traumatic.
It's a little scary, but also you'll see why there was a plane crash. It's from the 70s. It's not like a modern story, and airlines have gotten a lot better since then. So let's just preface that. Now, another thing I'd like to preface is that Julianne Kupke is German, and so her name is Juliani, but it's spelled Julian, like a Julianne Moore, that actress.
Oh, Julianne Moore, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going to be saying Julianne, but her actual name is Juliani.
Juliani. I like that.
I do too. It's pretty, but it's kind of hard to say throughout the whole episode, so I'm just going to stick to Julianne as much as I can.
No problem.
And her last name is Kupke. So if you guys are interested in looking her up, I do recommend it. But anyway, my source for today is the documentary Wings of Hope, which was directed by Werner Herzog, and it talks to her specifically, and it takes her through the jungle where she had to survive after the plane crash. Now, just a little, like, let's just do a 50-foot overview before we dive into Julianne's life story. In 1971, she boarded a plane with her mother on Christmas Eve, and it was meant to be a very quick one-hour flight, but unfortunately, halfway through, the plane was struck by lightning, and it crashed into the Amazon jungle below.
Okay, I'm sure you'll tell me. Never mind. Go ahead.
They're in Peru, by the way.
Okay, that's where I was like, where are they coming from?
Oh, they were going from Lima, Peru to, I forget the name. It was a small town in Peru. They never made it there, obviously, okay. But she was the only survivor. And we're about to figure out what she did to survive for 11 days by herself.
Ugh.
It's not as gross as it sounds, honestly.
Okay. I'm not going to go in with any assumptions. Let's just, let's take off.
Yeah, let's take off. Julianne was born in 1954 in Peru. Her family was German, though. So both of her parents emigrated to Peru as biologists. They were zoologists.
Aw, that's so cool.
It is. It's super cool. So both of them went to a university in Germany, and that's where they met, and both of them really wanted to study the Amazon jungle in Peru. So I guess the Peruvian jungle.
Yes.
Her mother was named Maria Kupke, and she's an ornithologist, so she mainly studied birds.
Okay, that's what I thought in my head. I'm like, I'm not going to say it just in case I'm wrong, but...
Ornithologist? Yeah. I had to Google it too, and it's funny because my... Sam's sister, one of my good friends, she is obsessed with birds. She's not an ornithologist officially, but she's that girl that if you send her a picture of a random bird that you see outside, she could tell you what kind of bird it is.
I'm going to send her a picture of Big Bird.
She'll be like, that is from the Jim Henson genre.
Of the Muppet region.
Species.
That's the genus. The Muppet genus. I sound like a fucking idiot.
That's great. That's funny. She'd get pissed. But anyway, So that was what her mom studied, was birds. Her dad studied basically everything. Her dad was interested in plants, reptiles, birds, insects. And together, Hans Wilhelm Kupke and Maria Kupke founded the Penguana Foundation.
Oh my God, please tell me there's penguins.
I wish. No.
I love penguins, though. Can they not just throw in an Amazon penguin or a jungle penguin? I guess,
you know what? You could kind of call the Penguana Amazon penguin. It's a bird, so
okay,
there you go.
Is it cute and does it waddle?
It waddles, but it's not as cute as a penguin, in my opinion. I'm sorry, Penguana fans out there.
If you're a Penguana fan, don't at us.
Don't at us. If you like Penguanas better than penguins, I don't know you.
Dang, you just got disowned.
But anyway, so the Penguana Foundation was for research and conservation, but when it first started in 1954, they weren't glamping out there, is basically what I'm going to say.
Well, what were they even doing if they're not glamping?
I know, right? They didn't have a coffee warmer. They didn't have a throw pillows, nothing like that.
Then they're not living. I'm just kidding. I like roughing it. I do.
I do too as well. Sometimes, like for like a weekend. Maybe.
I could go like 2 days, but I'm going to need a shower at some point.
Yeah, that's the thing. They didn't have showers. They didn't have no running water, no electricity. So, and obviously they're stuck in the middle of the jungle, so they're not getting groceries either. So they're living like the tribes around them.
Oh, that's cool.
It is kind of cool. And the tribes were very helpful because they knew that Maria and Hans Wilhelm were trying to help and preserve the area.
Mm-hmm.
So they even helped build these nice thatched roof huts for them so that they could live in relative comfort, at least have some, you know, somewhere to sleep at night.
That's good. I like that. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, villagers. But their child, their only child, Julianne Kupke, she was born in 1954, like I said. So, oh, I'm sorry. She was born in 1954. Penguana was founded in 1968, and she was 14 at that time. So basically, she's like a blonde German Dora the Explorer. She did speak Spanish, so she could have at least helped there with that.
That's cool.
It sounds like kind of a cool life. She was out there in the middle of the jungle with her two parents that are geniuses and know everything about trying to survive in the jungle.
If you're from the jungle, why are you white? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, she was living out there in the jungle with her family, her mom and her dad, and there was a group of researchers. So she, like, you know, she learned a lot about animals. She learned a lot about, you know, what to do and what not to do in the jungle, which would help her out later in life.
Mm-hmm. Don't pee on a campfire.
Yes, that is one lesson.
I feel like we've talked about that before.
I feel like we've mentioned that, yeah. But unfortunately, she didn't get to live there full time. The educational authorities of Peru decided that she couldn't be homeschooled at Penguana full year round. So she did have to go to regular school in Lima, Peru.
Okay, well, that's cool. I mean, she's still there.
True. She's still in Peru. Her mom moved with her to Lima for, you know, the school year. And she graduated after, you know, several years. She graduated at the age of 17 in 1971. And it was in December. So because of it, I think because of it being south of the equator, they have summers and winters flipped from us, okay, right?
Sure.
They graduate in December instead of like July, I believe is how it works. So she graduated in December, and before returning to the jungle, she wanted to attend her graduation ceremony and her senior prom.
Aww.
It is really cute, Lisa.
How awesome is that?
It's super great. If you look up Julianne Kupke prom pictures, I'll send them to you afterwards if you want, because
I'm doing it
I
right
love
now.
Her dress. It's black and white, so you can't tell the colors, but you can tell it's super floral in like 60s. And her boyfriend or whoever she took to the prom is this huge linebacker looking dude with the big goofy ass smile. He looks so happy to have her as his date. It's great. It's so great.
I see it. That is adorable. He looks like he's so nervous.
Yeah, I know. It looks like they had a good time. At least I hope they did.
Oh my gosh, how freaking cute.
I know. Yeah, so that was her prom.
She was gorgeous.
She's a pretty girl. Pretty mm-hmm. girl.
White Dora the Explorer, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah, basically white Dora the Explorer. German Dora the Explorer. But after the prom and the graduation ceremony was over, Julianne and her mom got tickets to fly home on Christmas Eve so they could go celebrate Christmas with her dad, who was still in Panguana. Well, unfortunately, they picked one of the worst airlines in the history of the world.
Spirit?
Yeah, I know, right? I know.
Just kidding, Spirit.
It was a very cheap airline similar to Spirit. That was exactly what I was thinking. But this one was worse because they had already had, this is it, they had already had so many crashes in their airplanes that they only had one airplane left.
Oh no, you really fly. Should do your research.
Yes, people. Do not fly with the airline that has crashed so many times that they have one airplane left. Come on, guys.
No.
Pretty awful stuff. We'll learn a little bit more about them later, but it's called Lanza Airlines. That's an acronym, and it stands for Linnaeus Aereus Nacionales Sociedad Anemonomina.
Damn. I think that sounds pretty good to me.
I mean, I think it sounds cool. I mean, it's just a bad airline. And to show you what happened to get rid of their last airplane before the one that Julianne rode on, a year before, in 1970, their airplane crashed directly after takeoff because one of their engines exploded. And 99 occupants, including 8 crew members, were killed in the crash and the subsequent fire. And that's not even counting the 2 farmers that were on the ground and got landed on by the airplane.
Oh, shit.
They died too.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. This is actually quite a famous crash that you guys might have heard of if you're listening to a lot of podcasts. It's Flight 502. From Lanza Airlines, and 49 of the passengers that died were, foreign exchange students from New York. Pretty nasty stuff.
And what was it, Flight 502?
Flight 502 crashed, in 1970, August.
I hate that you had to specify what month as well.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, because after that crash and all those people died, the only person who lived, by the way, one person lived, and it was the co-pilot. And he had such severe burns that, you know, it's just affected the rest of his life.
Oh.
But after that crash, the airline was fined and their license was suspended, but only for 90 days.
Oh, you have to be shitting me.
So they were basically a slap on the wrist for killing 99 people.
Oh my God. People who get in like drunk driving arrests get their license taken away for much longer.
Exactly.
Even when they don't even kill anybody. If they're just caught driving drunk, you get your license, you know, snatched up pretty quickly.
Exactly. And they killed 99 people. They weren't even supposed to have that many people on the plane. They had overfilled it.
1970s, what the fuck were you doing?
It's just this airline, I think. They were just real shitty. But anyway, Julian's father was like, no, don't fly Lanza. That's a bad idea. But they were like, well, it's cheap and, you know, we'll just take the risk, which was a bad idea.
But like, what the fuck is your life worth then? Like, come on.
I know, right? I'm not about to fly Lanza Airlines. They're gone now, obviously.
Well, I should hope so. Their last plane probably crashed, right?
Exactly. Their last plane crashed,
they had
yes.
nothing left.
Yeah. They're out of business.
FYI, in case you guys are like wondering why I'm so upset, let me just tell you, I don't like flying. I'm a terrible flyer. I have to take Xanax. So Paige like warned me ahead of time. She's like, you know, will you be okay? I'm like, yeah, I'll be fine. As long as I'm not on a plane. But this is infuriating. Like,
yes. Ugh. Exactly. That's why I also thought, you know, I'm sure people will be okay because it's not like a modern day American Airlines flight. You know, it's something that you're never going to be able to get on their planes.
Yes, that makes me feel a lot better, but still, I'm going to have to double up on my Xanax now.
Yeah, it's very infuriating. And we're going to learn more later about why it's so shitty. In fact, I'll just say it now. After all was said and done, they figured out that the mechanics who worked for Lanza Airlines had only previously ever worked on motorcycles.
Because it's completely the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't need to know what an airplane is. Just go and fix it.
All motors are created equal.
Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah. So the one thing, they don't have mechanics who know what they're doing. And for another thing, this plane that we're about to talk about, Flight 508, this plane was assembled entirely from spare parts of other planes.
I am shaking my head. I hope you can hear the whoosh whoosh.
It's so infuriating. And when they told Julian that in the documentary I watched, she was like so disappointed. Her face was just like, oh, God. As you can imagine.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine.
Yeah, very infuriating. Both of those things. So let's get into the actual flight itself. So flight 508 took off before noon on December 24th, 1971. The first half hour of the flight was uneventful. Julianne was sitting in the window seat. Her mom was sitting in the middle seat next to her. And then there was another passenger, a Peruvian guy sitting next to her, somebody they didn't know. Once they got to the halfway point over the Andes Mountains, which apparently are known to have severe thunderstorms, I didn't realize that.
I guess I never thought of it because I've never been there, but okay.
Yeah, that's true. I've never been there either. But now you know, if you go, Andes Mountains, bad thunderstorms. So when one of these monster storms picked up as they were flying through the Andes Mountains, so did the turbulence, as you can imagine. Julianne's mom, Maria, was starting to get very nervous, but Julianne was like, nah, it's okay, we'll be fine. But then she looked out the window because she was sitting on the window seat, and she was sitting over the wing, the right wing of the plane, and she saw a big flash of light hit the wing. And she didn't say this, but I'm assuming she could feel the electricity go through the plane because she said she knew right away that the plane had been hit by lightning.
Oh, I'm getting like Twilight Zone vibes.
Yeah, Twilight Zone, exactly. Except no Captain Kirk.
Yes. William Shatner was not on this flight.
No William Shatner on this flight. And no monster on the wing, just a lightning bolt.
That's the real monster.
It's the real monster, yeah. Her mom, having felt the jolt of electricity as well, I'm assuming, screamed out, "This is the end."
Oh, gosh. Way to
Yeah.
keep calm, Mom.
Yeah, mom is giving up on trying to hold it together at this point.
But hey, I feel her. I feel her.
Yeah, you know you're on a shitty airline. It's probably a shitty plane, and you're like, oh God, this was a bad idea. And unfortunately, right after the lightning strike and the plane started to go down, Julian blacked out. And I say unfortunately, meaning like she doesn't know what happened really at that point.
Right, but honestly, that might have been for the best.
Yes, I assume that you're right about that. What she does remember, she does have one flash of memory from this time. At some point, she was in the sky by herself, still strapped into her chair, and the whole row of chairs, of all three chairs, are still attached to her chair, but they're empty. So her mom is gone, and the plane is completely gone, and the stranger guy that was in the aisle seat is gone as well.
Thanks, Paige. Not ever flying again. Done.
You're welcome. No, don't worry about it. This is a shitty plane. We don't have shitty planes anymore like that. If basically what she said was, if even in her little flashes of memory, she remembers thinking like the plane broke apart. You know, it didn't hold together whatsoever. It was not built well. So she said in the documentary, one of her quotes that I'm paraphrasing here is, "I didn't leave the plane. The plane left me."
Oh shit. Oh
Yes.
God.
Yes. So she's up in the seat, tail spinning down, and she looks down and she sees the trees below. And her last thought that she can remember is, "It looks like broccoli that I'm falling onto because of the treetops." So
Girl,
I
girl.
know, very, very scary. And you know, one of my immediate thoughts is like, "Oh shit, where's my mom?" You know,
Yeah.
very scary. So after that, she didn't remember falling through the trees or anything like that. She woke up about a day or so later on the ground of the jungle. The reason that she knows that it was like a couple days or a day and a night was because she did wake up a couple times. Like she opened her eyes and she could look around, but she would immediately pass out again. And she thinks she got a concussion on her way down.
If that would probably be the best thing she had.
Yes. Yeah, actually, maybe, because we're about to go list her other injuries that she was aware of at the time. There was a broken clavicle. She could see that it was broken. It didn't break the skin or anything. So it was.
That's your collarbone, just FYI.
Correct. Yes, thank you. Collarbone was broken. Gash in her arm, and she could already tell by the time she woke up from her concussion, that there was flies in her wound, and so she thought maybe
Oh.
there was going to be some maggots getting in there.
Ugh.
Pretty awful.
Yikes.
In her calf, there was another gash, but that one wasn't bleeding and there was no maggots in that one.
So it was a gash. Had it dried already at that point? Like,
she remembers thinking, it's really weird that it's not bleeding. That's all she could really remember about that cut.
That's weird, but okay. Yeah. I mean, if it stopped bleeding, that's fine.
Yeah, maybe it had stopped bleeding by that point. She'd been out for a little while. One of her eyes was swollen shut. You can imagine she probably got hit in the eye.
Yeah.
She also lost her glasses, so the eye that she could see out of was nearsighted.
Okay, so can't see far off.
Can't really see.
That's kind of terrifying. I mean, it's all terrifying. I mean, me over here, oh my God, I can only see up close.
I mean, that makes it scary. That makes it real scary. Can't even see what's going on. Maybe that's better. I don't know. But so she lost her glasses. She also lost one of her sandals.
How did she survive?
Yeah, I specify sandals because it's like, even if she had kept that one sandal, I mean, it probably would have helped, but sandals are not the right footwear for this situation.
No.
Obviously, she didn't know that this would be the situation. She also wore a mini dress. She had a floral mini dress on that she said was very cute and very fashionable for the time, but also not very great for the jungle.
Probs not.
Yeah.
But then again, she really wasn't expecting for a layover in the jungle.
No, she was not expecting to have to hike it on foot the rest of the way. Mm-mm. So she did not plan for that. But and already the dress was torn because she had been falling through trees. So it's already a mess. But despite all these injuries, Julian was in shock. So she didn't really feel any pain at this point.
It's incredible, like, what our bodies can do to protect us, like, both mentally and physically.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah.
It's insane, isn't it? It's like, okay, you're in a shitty situation. You don't need to feel this pain right now until later.
Yeah. Wait till you're a little safer. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that was the only reason she was able to get up and, like, start moving around is because she didn't feel all this pain yet. Otherwise, I don't know, but she might have just, like, just laid there and died. I don't know. But anyway, so now we're going to start getting into her knowledge of the jungle and how it keeps her alive during this time.
I gotta say, so she's already been raised by two scientists, essentially.
Yeah.
And she's probably spent a lot of time in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
So really, this couldn't have happened to a better person. I mean, maybe her mom, but still.
Well, that's true. That's true. That would have been okay, too. Her mom would have also known how to survive in the jungle, but you're exactly right. This is like her backyard. It's the same Peruvian jungle. Maybe not in the exact same area, but it's still in Peru, and it's still the jungle. So if she had been dropped in the Sahara, she would have been as clueless as the rest of us. But in the jungle, she knew what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, exactly. She's primed for it. Now, she heard in the distance the sound of a king vulture landing on the ground, on the jungle floor.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she knew, because her mom was an ornithologist, that king vultures only land on the jungle floor when there's carrion to eat.
Right.
So she was like, oh, well, I'm going to follow that and see what is over there.
Oh, I thought it was coming for her.
Oh, no, she's fine. She's still alive.
Okay. Well, I mean, if it can smell blood and like rotting of, or, you know, an infection or whatever, I thought maybe it would be like hanging out waiting, because I know some vultures will like circle and like be ready as soon as something like keels over.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. I have no idea. I'm not an ornithologist, unfortunately, but I think that the vultures that'll circle you are more like where we live, like in the desert and in America and stuff.
Okay.
This king vulture apparently does not even tip its hat for anything that's still alive.
Okay.
So she knew that about this king vulture. I don't know how she could hear that it was a king vulture and not some other kind of bird, but she knew what it was.
FYI, they're beautiful. For a vulture, they're very colorful. They're like the parrot peacock of vultures.
I know, right? I just thought the same thing. That's so cool. Did you just Google it?
I just Googled it. I'm like, they have like black tipped wings with kind of a white body, and then they got like an orange yellow sunset on their neck, like very pretty, and sometimes blue.
Very pretty. I thought so too.
She could probably identify it fairly easy based on its coloring, and it has a weird nose thing going on, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, she only said that she heard it at first. Oh, okay. So maybe I was like, how did you know just by hearing it? But maybe she saw it as well. I don't know. But
FYI, the babies are super cute too.
Are they? Oh, it's usually like, baby birds aren't very
cute. It's an ugly vulture head, but with like the poofiest little body.
Oh, little poof.
Sorry, off topic, but their soup's cute. Like, if we could have like a palate cleanser here, they're very cute.
Yes, yeah, the animals are definitely a palate cleanser in this story, I think, at least the birds. So yeah, go look up King Vulture if you need a palate cleanser right now.
And the babies and the chicks are so, super cute.
Yeah, look up both. You gotta see them both.
You gotta see the vulture baby.
That's a good accent. I like it.
Thanks, Seinfeld. Seinfeld.
I like that show. But anyway, so she, like I said, she knew what she was gonna find, and it would be something dead. So when she came up to where the vulture had landed, and I assume scared it away, she found another set of chairs all attached to each other, another row of seats.
Oh, God.
And this one was flipped upside down and buried into the ground about 2 to 3 feet, she said.
Oh, shit. How hard did they hit?
Right? I don't know. I don't know what happened to force them into the ground that deep. Maybe it was quicksand. She said that it must have hit really hard. But there were people in the seats. All she could see of them was their feet sticking out.
Sip, sip, what the shit? This is going to give me nightmares.
I feel like this one is more real than some of the other scary episodes we've done. Like, more visceral, because we've all been on an airplane. But anyway.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, in her concussed state, she was still a little bit disoriented. And she thought the lady in the middle might be her mom. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if it was in the middle. One of these seats, there was a lady, and she thought, maybe that's my mom. Even though later she was like, of course that's not my mom. My mom was sitting next to me and not in another row. But, you know, she's disoriented at this point. So she starts looking at the foot to see if she can somehow gauge if it's her mom or not. And fortunately or unfortunately, it's not her mom. It's another lady. And she figured that out because the toenails were painted, and her mom never had painted toenails. So she was both happy that it's not her mom about to get eaten by a king vulture, but also sad because she doesn't know where her mom is.
Yeah, I think even though it's not her mom, at least it makes her feel better knowing definitely her mom's not gone in that way.
Yes.
But then again, it's still not comforting in the way, like, you still don't know where your mom is.
It's a double-edged sword, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, she said that at that point she felt very hopeless and alone, and like she wanted to give up and just kind of sit down, because she was like, I don't have anybody to help me. I'm in the middle of the jungle. Like, I don't know where to go. And I'm hurt, I guess. I can't feel it, but I know I'm hurt.
Aww.
And she didn't know if she would be rescued or anything like that. But she decided, like, you know what? I've got to get up. I've got to keep moving and try to find people somewhere. But before she left the area of the wreckage, she found a bag of candy. She was looking for food, trying to see if there was anything she could salvage. She found a bag of candy. She didn't specify what kind of candy. It might not even be around anymore.
Hmm.
And a large, quote-unquote, Christmas cake is what she called it.
A Christmas cake, like a fruitcake?
I assume, I have no idea, because all she said was, well, they were very, at the time, the Germans in Peru would make Christmas cakes, and they were this big, and it made it look like it was like a foot tall or half a foot tall or something like that.
Damn.
So I don't know what kind of cake it was, but she said she found a Christmas cake in the mud, and she was like, oh, good, and she tried to take it with her, but as soon as she took a bite of it, it was all mud, like at that point.
Oh, no, it was mud cake.
Mud pie. Yeah, so she didn't take that with her because she was like, oh, it's gross now. And I kind of agree. Like, I can't imagine trying to eat a cake completely just submerged from mud. But in the documentary, she was like, but I was stupid. I should have taken the cake with me.
Yeah, I mean, it might have had a little mud on it, but I mean, could have given you some nourishment, but
yeah, I mean, you could probably try to scrape off the mud. I don't know. She was, I guess she was pretty delirious at the time. She might have taken a bite from the wrong end and didn't realize she could have scraped it off or something. I don't know. But
it's hindsight, you know.
Hindsight, yes. She did take the bag of candy, which, you know, is not very sustaining.
Well, it'll give you some quick energy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So she did bring the candy with her, and she tried to ration it out so it didn't, you know, disappear in one day.
That's smart. I would have died immediately probably from a sugar overdose, but maybe, you know, succumb to my injuries.
You know, I don't, I would like to think I would have gotten up and done what she's doing, but I might have just stayed down and let myself die. I don't know.
I'm an emotional eater, so it might have been gone pretty fast.
So she took this candy and she headed into the woods, into the jungle, further into the jungle, I guess. Now at this point, these other instincts kick in, all these other things she's learned about surviving in the jungle from her parents. And is another bird-related fact. Her mom taught her that a specific bird in the jungle named the Hoatzin bird, which is also a very pretty bird, by the way.
How do you spell that?
H-O-A-T-Z-I-N.
Oh, that's a very pretty bird.
Yeah. And they apparently are always by open water or by, you know, rivers and things like that.
Yeah. Swamps, mangroves.
All kinds of stuff. I don't know. What would you call it? Kind of looks like a pretty chicken.
Pheasant, let me say, maybe? It kind of looks... If you can imagine the flower bird of paradise as an actual bird, I would say that's kind of what it looks like. It has kind of the feathers on the head. It has like some red wings, mostly black with some yellow tips. It's very pretty.
It is very pretty. And you're totally right about that birds of paradise because the feathers on its head are kind of orange and they're poking up like a bird of paradise. So and there we go. Maybe that's what the person who named that flower was thinking of.
Maybe.
So she was listening for the Hoatzin bird's call. And she says it's a very distinct call that sounds kind of like a huffing, like a heh. And so she knew that if she could follow that call, she would find water, and if she could find some sort of running river or stream, she could follow it to its source, and eventually there would be people because, you know, they'd congregate around water at some point.
Sure.
Even if it was just a tribe, because she could speak the, you know, she could speak Spanish. Most of the tribes in the jungle could speak Spanish. She'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So she did. She found that she listened for the Hoatzin bird. She followed it to the water. She started following the stream upstream and, you know, was like, okay, thanks, mom and dad. Now I know how to find help. Now, another thing that they taught her, and I'm still kind of confused about myself. She said that it's safer for her to walk. At this point, maybe especially because she's so weakened and she doesn't have proper clothes and stuff like that, it's safer for her to walk in the middle of the stream than it would be for her to just walk in the jungle.
In what way?
She didn't specify what was so dangerous about the jungle. I mean, I can imagine.
Maybe less dangerous animals would swim out to her. I'm thinking like, I don't know, if are there bears in the Amazon? I don't know. But I'm thinking like maybe wild cats less. I mean, they still swim. Damn it.
They still swim, but maybe they're not less inclined to. I don't know. But she did say that the water was a safe place for her to be, even though they have things like piranhas, crocodiles, snakes.
Girlfriend, get out of the water.
I know, right? Stingrays. I didn't even know there were stingrays in the rivers of the Amazon jungle. Apparently there are some and they're really bad.
There's no safe place, but I guess if that's where you want to be and you feel the most comfortable and you're most likely to find people, okay.
Right. I know. Yeah. I trust you, Julian.
Yeah. What do we know? Like we've ever done this before.
No. I know. But it's like, I really wanted her to go into more detail about that, but it wasn't the focus of the documentary. So I understand. But she did explain that, so even though all those dangerous animals I just talked about, like the piranhas and stuff, she said piranhas aren't super dangerous because they will only attack humans if they're in a huge group and if they're not in running water. So as long as she's in running water, piranhas are no danger to her.
Okay, that makes sense.
Crocodiles, apparently, at least in the Amazon, I don't know about anywhere else, crocodiles in the Amazon don't bother humans as long as humans don't bother them.
Okay, I could see that.
I think they're a little smaller as well, but anyway. And as for the snakes and the stingrays, the danger from them is stepping on them because then they'll turn and bite you or sting you.
Yes.
So what she would do is use her foot that had a sandal on it to test the riverbed in front of her. Each step to make sure she's not about to step on one.
Yeah.
Plus, she doesn't have her glasses, so she couldn't even see him if she wanted to. There's this one scene that she described of when she was walking up the river, and she said that four crocodiles were on the bank of the river that she was walking in, and they all jumped in at the same time into the water right where she was, and... As an adult explaining this, she was like, I bet a normal person would have freaked out, but I knew that I was okay.
Jesus. Sip, sip with the shit. Taking a drink right
here
now.
Here we go. Let's do it. Ah, yes, I needed that because, that would have scared the shit out of me. So, any hoops. Now, she'd been spending several days. In total, she spends 11 days by herself after the plane crash. So, in the daytime, she's walking through the water, following it to its source, hoping to find people. At night, she'll look for a big rock or an embankment or something that she can put her back against so she can try to get some sleep, have at least a little bit of shelter.
Sure.
I think she said about day 7 or 8, she ran out of candy, so she didn't have anything else to eat.
God, don't you hate when that happens?
Especially when it's candy.
I know. Bet she wished she had brought that mug cake.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I bet she's wishing she had that Christmas cake right now. But she also said that because of the shock and maybe even her concussion, she didn't feel hungry, but she knew that she should be eating and she didn't have anything to eat.
Yeah.
But she did start to feel very weak, and she started to feel delirious after not having any more candy or any other food, for that matter. So by day 10, she kind of gave up a little bit. She sat down on the riverbank because she just couldn't even think anymore enough to keep moving forward. So she's like, I need to sit down. So she sat down and she just stared out into space for who knows how long to try and relax a little bit. And then somehow she kind of snapped back into herself and paid more attention, and she saw that there was a boat not even very far from where she had sat down, and she hadn't seen it before because of just being delirious.
Yeah.
And she's like, wait, is this a hallucination? And she walked up to it, touched it. It's real. It was real under her hands. It's a real boat.
Woo-woo!
So she's saved. Right?
I would hope so.
Yeah, actually, she is kind of saved, but it takes a little while. So she notices that the boat is tied up into the bank. Mm-hmm. She goes up the bank. She finds a hut. So that's also good news. At least she's got some shelter.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there's no food in the hut, but she does find one thing. She finds a canister of gasoline.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that this is good for her is because she's got maggots in her arm at this point.
Oh.
And she knew that if she didn't get rid of them, that she might need to get her arm amputated.
Yikes. Would that really be a thing? Like, I know shit about medical anything.
I think she said if the maggot stayed in there too long, she would get some sort of blood poisoning in the arm.
Sure.
And also, you know, this is Peruvian hospitals and stuff like that. Maybe they, you know, in the 70s, maybe they would amputate before trying to heal the poisoned blood. I don't know. I don't know what would happen these days. But she said she was nervous about having to get it amputated. So what she did, and this was something else she learned from her parents, is you take the gasoline and you put it in the wound to get the maggots out.
Okay, I'm guessing they're not a fan of the gasoline. I really thought you were going to say, like, light it on fire and, like, burn the wound or, like, cauterize it or something. I don't know.
I mean, that might have worked, too, to get the maggots out of there. But she didn't have to do all that, I guess. She just used the gasoline in the wound. It made the maggots come out. And she said, by her count, she got about 30 out of pulling them individually, which is disgusting to think about. But
yeah,
she was able to do it.
Glad I didn't eat dinner tonight. We were going to have spaghetti. I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much.
We're going to have spaghetti too. Yeah, it's pretty gross. But, and, you know, I'm, she's kind of my hero for, you know, she's like been out on her own, hasn't had anything to eat. She's got broken bones, concussion. And she's like, you know what I need to do? Pull these maggots out of my arm. You know, I was like, damn, she's a badass.
I can only imagine. I don't know if she has kids or anything, but I could imagine her kids like bitching about something. She's like, you know what? I survived 11 days in the fucking jungle with maggots and I figured that out. You can't figure out how to pick your underwear up off the floor.
I know, right? Oh my God. You never have any argument against this woman.
No.
You could never complain about anything.
Nothing.
Yes, exactly. So she did get inside the hut because she, you know, she was like, finally some shelter from like the rain, the mosquitoes, all this junk. She said that there was frogs jumping around her in the hut and she was so weak she couldn't even reach out to catch the frog because she wanted to eat one.
Yeah, that's good eating.
Yeah, heck yeah. Except she didn't realize at the time because she was, you know, nearsighted and delirious, but they were poison dart frogs. So it's a good thing. Yeah. It's a good thing she couldn't catch them.
Probs, yeah.
So she said that later. She's like, yeah, they probably would have killed me if I had actually been able to eat one. But luckily, not too long later, I think it was just the next day, 3 loggers showed up because that was their cabin. And when they first saw her, she's looking pretty ragged. you know, as you can imagine.
I can imagine, yes.
And they didn't know what or who she was, this random woman showing up in there, and probably, she said it was mostly because of her blonde hair and her completely bloodshot eyes.
Yeah, I could totally see finding, like, a disheveled, dirty, been through hell white chick with blonde hair in the middle of some logger's hut. They'd be like, yeah. Are like, you in wait. The wrong place, honey?
Right, like, what?
Wrong house, wrong house. You want the one next door. Wrong hut.
Yeah, like, I don't know you. She said that apparently in the Amazon jungle, they have a legend of some sort of, like, river demon who looks like a blonde woman with, like, bloody eyes. So they thought, God. Is this a demon?
I hope they didn't think that, really.
They thought it for, like, a second, but then she started speaking Spanish to them and explained what happened, and they're like, oh, that makes more sense.
But that could be the demon.
Could be the demon trying to trick you. You don't know. Mm-mm. But yeah, that's it. They found her, they helped her, they gave her some food, some water, let her sleep in, like, a normal bed, and they were able to get her to a hospital pretty shortly after there.
Good. Oh, my God.
Yeah, 11 days out there by herself, all injured and everything. Pretty nasty.
Honestly, if I had woken up, you know, from the plane crash, I would just lay there and be like, okay, well, this is how I die.
Exactly.
Don't know where I am, don't know what to do. I'm just going to close my eyes and let this be this.
I was like, I hope somebody comes and finds me. Otherwise, I'm dead. I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, goodness.
And that was one of the things I didn't mention, is that she could hear, as she was looking around the plane crash zone, she could hear planes overhead trying to find where the plane had crashed, like rescue planes.
Oh, that's got to be the worst.
Yeah, she could hear them, but she couldn't do anything about it. And also, the canopy was so thick that they couldn't tell where the plane had crashed. So they gave up after a couple days. And that's one of the other reasons that she's like, well, I'm on my own. I better start walking.
Yeah, I can only imagine how, like, big and vast it is. And also, the plane probably didn't have the greatest, like, radar stuff. And
oh, yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, not any more calm or anything. They can't just, like, okay, we landed on this point in the jungle. Everybody else was dead. She was the only one alive. She didn't have a cell phone, obviously, you know.
And there's probably no, like, plane tracker thing at this point. I don't know. There could be, but I doubt it. And I doubt they could afford it.
Right. Even if they did have that technology back then, I don't think Lancet Airlines made use of it.
No, not unless they scavenged it off some other plane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it probably didn't work very well if they did. But there's only one more thing I'd like to mention about the documentary I watched. The reason Werner Herzog, who's, I guess, been a director for a long time, he's done a lot of documentaries and stuff like that, and he has a very funny voice and likes to make fun of himself, so I like him for that reason. The reason he made this documentary about her and spent all this money to get her exactly where the plane crashed, they were, like, finding debris of the plane in the forest floor, you know? Mm-hmm. The reason he wanted to do that is because he was actually scheduled to be on that flight.
Oh, shit. No way.
Yeah, he was out in the jungle filming a movie, and he was trying to take that same flight, but something happened and he wasn't able to do the flight. And so he was like, if I had been on that plane, I would be dead.
Somebody was looking out for him.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was a total coincidence that he didn't make it onto that flight. And so it stuck with him for a long time, thinking about what could have happened. So that's why he contacted her and made the documentary Wings of Hope.
I'm not loving the title. I feel like it's a very dated name for a documentary or a book, but
it was 1998. I don't know which.
Okay, then that makes way more sense.
Yeah, that's when the documentary was made. And also, the Wings of Hope, they got that title from, what's it called? They built, like, a statue as a memorial to the flight that had crashed. And the memorial is big, and it's got little inscriptions for everybody who died in mm-hmm. the crash. And then it also tells the story of how Julian survived. And it has a map, this tiny little map on top that shows how she got through the jungle. And somewhere on this statue, it says something like Wings of Hope in Spanish. And that's why they named the documentary that.
Was she reunited with her dad? Because he wasn't mm-hmm. on the flight.
Yeah. Yeah. Her dad shortly after she got to the hospital, she was reunited with her dad. And here's the kicker. As soon as she was healed up enough to leave the hospital, she went right back out there to the plane crash site to look for other, you know, survivors or, you know, people or something like that, just to go out there and help the search and rescue.
I guess it's just a recovery mission at that point.
Yeah, there weren't any other survivors.
She probably knew there was no other survivors. Well, then again, if you know, another row of seats had crashed or landed further away and she walked in the opposite direction, there could be people still surviving out there. But did they ever find her mom?
They did find her mom. It wasn't until a year later. This crash site is huge. Like, it had spread out so much because the plane broke apart. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they didn't find all of the pieces of the plane and they didn't find all of the survivors right away. But about a year later, at this time, she had moved to Germany to go to university. Mm-hmm. But they did find her mom's body a year later. And I don't have a lot of details about, I think she tried to keep it out of the press what happened to her mom because it was kind of emotional for her. But she did say that her mom had likely survived at least a couple days after the crash, but had died of her injuries.
Oh,
I know.
I wonder if she had been like with her mom, if they would have survived together, if she would have been able to help her mom.
I would have hoped if they had both been in the row of seats together. Something like that. Yeah, it would have been, it would probably have been a big comfort to her to have her mom there with her while she's in the jungle.
That is crazy.
Yes, intense, super intense. Ugh. Woo. But I do recommend, if you guys want to, Wings of Hope is on YouTube for free right now. If you just type it in, it's like an hour. Turn it on while you're eating dinner or something. It's very interesting. She tells her own story in her own words, and it shows a lot of the pieces of the plane because they're going through the jungle and like picking up, oh, look, here was the emergency door. And I think they even found the row of seats that she had landed in. So anyway, pretty interesting story. They might be making a movie about it with the girl who played Sansa Stark in Game of Thrones.
Her picture came up when I was Googling things.
So yeah, they might call it Girl Who Fell from the Sky, but I haven't found any information about it except that Sansa Stark might be in it.
Yeah, Sophie Turner.
Yeah, Sophie Turner. I like Sansa Stark better. No, I'm just kidding. But it's there's a book I want to read written by Julianne Kupke, and it's called When I Fell from the Sky. So I'd like to read that. Get a little bit more in depth. Have more nightmares, maybe.
Maybe.
I know.
So today, is she still associated with the is it Penguana?
Yeah, Penguana. I actually don't really know how to say it. Penguana, something like that. Yes, she is actually. As soon as she finished, she went to college in Germany. Mm-hmm. She studied zoology, just like her parents.
Aww.
And as soon as she was done, she went straight back to Peru, started working in Penguana with her dad. Her specialty was bats and daytime butterflies. Yeah, and she's still out there. I think she goes back and forth between like Germany and Penguana, but she still heads up the foundation. She's made it blossom. Like, it's huge now. There are more amenities now, and they're still going strong.
Yeah, and I see their website. It's penguana.de. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has pictures of her parents, of her, and I think she goes by Julianne Diller now. I guess she got married.
Oh, yes.
How did you say her name? Is it Yulani?
Oh, Yuliani.
Yuliani.
Yeah, and her husband studies wasps.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's crazy. She just went right back into that life. She hadn't, it's like, some of us, even if we had grown up in the jungle, we might have been like, fuck that, you know?
Yeah, being completely traumatized, but it seems she's like really embraced it and grew it. Like, good for her, like making something of this trauma.
Yeah, I think in the end it might have been even more therapeutic to just live in the jungle the rest of her life and be like, I'm okay here.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my God, Paige. I'm gonna have nightmares.
I know, I'm sorry. Me too. The nightmare image for me is the seats. Like, waking up, you're in the seat, there's nobody next to you, and it's like, where did they go? Where's the plane? Anyway, well, that's our episode. I hope you guys God.
Sleep well.
Don't think about airplanes for a while. This is a good time to do it during quarantine.
Could you imagine if someone was listening to this? Like, they're like, hey, I'm going to just like download an episode of Near Death Dolls. Here's the newest one. And I'm just going to listen to it on the plane. And oh, yes! Fuck me.
Oh my God. I know. I was thinking that. I was like, oh shit, I better give a warning right up at top.
Right up at top.
Well, thanks for listening anyway, if you got to the end of this episode. Be sure to check us out on Instagram. We're at Near Death Dolls Podcast. You could tweet us on the Twitter at Near Death Dolls and send us an email at neardeathdolls@gmail.com for our listener story episodes, or what we like to call Dear Dollies. So if you want to email us with your weird personal experience, whatever, you know, spooky thing that's happened to you, and let us know if we can use your name or not. And if you have a social media you want us to shout out.
And if you like what you heard, let us know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also help by taking a screenshot while you're listening to our episode and share it on Instagram or Twitter. It's a fast, simple, and free way to support us. And if you feel like joining in on the fun, come over to the Dark Dolly side and join our Patreon for some delicious extras. Oh, sweet-ass doll faces. You guys rock. We love you. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Make sure you wear your seatbelt on the plane. It could save your life.
If we're going to take anything away from this, wear your seatbelt.
Wear it in the car, wear it on the plane, wear mm-hmm. it on a train, and wear it in your brain. That was the worst rhyme. I'm sorry.
I would not eat green eggs and ham. Sam, I am.
Special thanks to Sam Hears for our art and music.
If you'd like to see more from him, check out the links in our show notes.